Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. Egyptian authorities have deported six South Sudanese students for allegedly beating a police officer in Cairo.
I have confirmed from those of CID, the deportees were four. Three were involved in the demonstration of the students. One of them is a lady, and the charge was that they fought with the police.
And officials in the Greater Pibor administrative area say floods have displaced thousands of families.
Those four counties, some floods were really displaced some people in different locations where there is the drier places. These are only the things really with the disturbance here.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Six South Sudanese students studying in Egypt were deported to Juba on Friday and Monday. The spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service confirmed the deportation and says the students were accused of beating an Egyptian police officer during a recent protest at the South Sudan Embassy in Cairo. An Egyptian diplomat in South Sudan, who is not authorized to speak to the media, denied the deportation and arrest allegations. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Bech Marial Diu, a first-year South Sudanese student at the College of Medicine in Cairo, and two other students were deported to South Sudan last Friday. They were immediately handed over to the South Sudan National Police Service, where they are being investigated. Major General Daniel Justin, a spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, says the three students were accused of beating an Egyptian police officer during a recent protest, according to the Criminal Investigation Directorate, or CID.
I have confirmed from those of CID, the deportees were four. Three were involved in the demonstration of the students. One of them is a lady, and the charge was that they fought with the police. They had beaten one police officer, and the case was opened against them, and then as a result, they were deported.
On October 4th, South Sudanese students studying in various universities under the Egyptian government scholarship staged a sit-in protest at the South Sudanese embassy in Cairo, demanding better living conditions at Egyptian universities. Deported student Bech Marial Diu says he was arrested and detained with 10 other students until his deportation on Friday.
On the 4th of October, we were arrested. 10 students were arrested, and we were inmate in prison for almost 3 weeks. So while we were there, we were only allowed to see outside when we were doing our corona test. So, and then the following day, we were taken direct from prison to the airport. So, this hour, and then we were supervised by the security personnel, and then we handled the CID in Juba Airport.
Marial says they were not tried in a court of law to qualify for deportation. He says his dream for a better future has been shattered. Abouk Mathieu Bol, a second-year student of law, was also deported from Egypt on Friday. Mathieu Bol says her deportation came as a surprise.
We were not taken to the court. We were just taken to place of passport. When we went to that place, they asked us that who's going to book for you the ticket. Then we asked them, where are we going? Because that question it was a surprise to us. So we asked them, where are we going? Then they told us, you're going back to South Sudan. Then we told them, what did we do? Then they told us, no, that one is none of our concern. What did you do?
Mathieu Bol says the deportation means she will have to start over. But in the meantime, she worries about some of her colleagues.
I'm feeling painful for those students who are the one who is almost to finish this year. The one who is in sixth year is called Jack. He's supposed to graduate this year. Now his education is cut. while he has studied for 6 years. This is now a very painful situation for us.
Ajak Aromayom, a sixth-year student of medicine, was deported from Egypt on Monday along with two other South Sudanese students. Arau, a former South Sudanese Students' Union president, says he was arrested while trying to provide food and water to students who were detained at the South Sudanese embassy in Cairo.
But because I love my country and I feel South Sudanese, so that's why I involved myself. But I was not part of the budget of 2021-2022. Something that I did not expect. Because my ambassador, who is supposed to take care of me, and was able to do this report us without any crime is something I cannot explain, but God knows what will happen next.
Matthew and Marial both say conditions at the detention facilities were appalling. Last week, South Sudanese student leaders in Egypt issued a statement calling on authorities in Juba to stop the deportation of 11 university students under Egyptian government scholarship. An Egyptian diplomat who is not authorized to speak to the media says he cannot confirm whether there are students being detained and says he has not, quote, heard anything regarding deported students. The Higher Education and Foreign Affairs Ministries in South Sudan have both declined to comment on the student deportations. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says flood victims are in dire need of support in South Sudan. Authorities in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area are calling for urgent humanitarian support for families displaced by floods. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
John Koko, the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission chairperson in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says over 60,000 people from more than 1,100 households have been displaced from Lilkwangule, Pochala, Bertat, and Pibor counties. Koko says torrential rains have caused riverbanks from Pibor River, Lotila River, and Kangjens River to crest, causing floodwaters to sweep across communities. Koko says many of the displaced have been left without access to food or clean water after their livelihoods, including crops, goats and cattle, have been washed away by floodwaters.
Those four counties, some floods were really displaced some people in different location as well. There is the drier places. These are only the things really with it is tough as here in Greater Bibor, in level of only displacing people who are nearest to the river bank.
Koko says the displaced people are facing the risk of being exposed to waterborne diseases, including malaria, diarrhea, and snake bites, as the floodwaters that inundated their homes and farms.
Yes, the government in the Greater Bibor, we are really managing to talk to the people who are displaced to really go and accommodate themselves with brothers who are really in the higher land where there is the dry places to stay with them. And we are also coordinating to the NGOs to give the support to them at least. Maybe they will also get some wage of the food so that they will support their families. They will provide them some plastic sheet and even some shelter at least to accommodate themselves.
John Abula, the Deputy Chief Administrator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says he is concerned about the worsening humanitarian situation, noting local authorities are hard-pressed to respond due to limited resources. He says Pibor Administrative Area officials have informed the national government regarding the situation.
The RRC at the national level sent in a team now that are with us making assessment. So the national government now trying its best to find how many people being affected and now they are trying. So we received a high delegation from Juba 3 days ago. They are now within the area, within the headquarter here, making assessment. So they will be touring the whole counties, but it will be not easy for them, it's difficult to reach to affect some areas because of inaccessibility.
Abula says the suffering among locals in the greater Pibor area has been complicated by high food prices due to a lack of road connectivity after the major roads linking Pibor to Juba through Bor were closed due to insecurity.
This year, the conflict that erupted between youth of Jungule and youth of Pibor make it difficult for the local traders to access market in Juba or in Bor. So this is what also contributed to suffering. You come to Pibor now, you will find a bottle of soda with 1,500. So we are really very terrible situation here in Greater Pibor.
Abula says the only way to supply markets in Pibor is by air, which he says is cost prohibitive for many traders. Another factor is climate change, which officials say is taking a heavy toll on rural communities. According to the South Sudan flooding snapshot, over 900,000 people were reportedly affected by floods in 29 counties across South Sudan and in the southern parts of the Abyei administrative area. People in northern Bahr el Ghazal, Warab, Unity, and Western Equatorial States are the worst affected. The fourth year of mass flooding has impacted almost 1 million people in South Sudan so far this year, according to the UN's Emergency Aid Coordination Agency, OCHA. The UN says floods have affected more than 900,000 people in 29 counties across the country and the southern parts of the Abyei administrative area. For VOA News, I am Dengai Ding in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Juba, where South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar, says he still holds the position of the deputy chairperson of the SPLM party headed by President Salva Kiir. Machar, who heads the SPLM in opposition breakaway faction, is against a decision taken by the SPLM political bureau last week to dismiss him and former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amun from the party under the leadership of President Salva Kiir. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
The ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement terminated Machar's membership from the party as well as that of Pagan Amun, former Secretary General of the SPLM, from its leadership structure. Machar heads the SPLM-IO while Amun established his own political movement, the Really SPLM. Pok Both Baluang, acting press secretary in Machar's office, says President Salva Kiir and the SPLM party has no right to dismiss his boss as deputy chair of the SPLM party. He says no other faction of the SPLM has authority in making executive decisions over the SPLM party affairs. Both the SPLM-IO and the SPLM in government or SPLM-IG faction led by President Kiir claim legitimacy over the SPLM party. Baluang says the SPLM is comprised of three factions, SPLM-IG, SPLM-IO, and the Really SPLM.
Unless the three factions come together and sit down to decide the fate of the SPLM and their political and organizational issues as in three factions. So if there's any replacement or dismissal for any member of the three factions, it should be through the national convention that will be conducted and the members of the three factions to participate in it.
Baluang says while Machar chairs the SPLM-IO faction, he still remains the deputy chair of the SPLM. He says an agreement signed in Arusha in 2015 by the factions of the SPLM had resolved that changes in leadership of the SPLM party only be carried out during a conventional election. He says until elections are conducted, the SPLM party remains a body with no leadership. Kual Atem, the Secretary for Political Affairs in the SPLM-IG, strongly disagrees.
Arusha agreement was there, but he was the one who violated the Arusha agreement by establishing his new party. Instead of coming back to the party and declare that, yes, I have joined the SPLM, then Arusha agreement now can work. But he has already left and he went and established his own party.
Baluang insists President Kiir can only take decisions on SPLM-IG affairs, not the SPLM party. The SPLM-IG is one of several political parties that signed the revitalized agreement. It includes other parties. Baluang says Machar was elected during an SPLM convention to be the deputy chair of the party.
Until the agreement of Arusha is implemented fully in letter and spirit, SPLM remain with three factions with no direct leader. Before they split in 2013, Salpa is the chair of the party, and His Excellency the Correct Machar is the first deputy. This is a fact until the convention is conducted.
Baluang says the Arusha agreement stipulates that the dismissal of SPLM leaders can only occur during elections held at the party's convention. Kual Atem says the decision to dismiss Machar and Amum was taken during the party's recent political bureau meeting last week in Juba. And Atem says the party's National Liberation Council has yet to make a final decision on the dismissal of Machar and Amum. Baluang says the ruling party's action not only violates the Arusha agreement but obstructs implementation of the peace deal and other peace efforts meant to restore stability. Atem says that is not true.
For you to leave the party and you go and establish your own party, automatically you dismiss yourself. You don't need anybody to dismiss you. Even number two, ours is not being called SLMIG. It is called SLM only. We are talking about the legal name. SLM is a registered political party with only the name of SLM only. There's no IG there.
Efforts to reach Amon for comments were unsuccessful as he did not answer his phone or respond to text messages. The Arusha agreement states in part that the parties had agreed and revoked decisions for dismissal of party cadres from party membership and leadership positions resulting from the internal conflict within the party. It also says all processes of holding party congresses and national conventions shall be suspended until the reunification and reconciliation of the party is achieved and the war is ended so that all members can participate effectively and freely. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udu in Juba.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, creative individuals from different African countries are showcasing their talents in Washington, D.C. Find out how after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague who live together. Those who know about, those who have been experienced more problems about health, they don't advise me through phone. We talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have, my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Monday was World Polio Day, and advocates for a polio-free world have urged nations to commit to a new five-year strategy to eradicate the crippling disease and consign it to the trash bin of history. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
An estimated 350,000 children were paralyzed by polio when the World Health Organization launched its Global Polio Eradication Initiative in 1988. In the world today, polio is endemic only in Pakistan and Afghanistan. So far this year, 29 cases have been recorded, putting the possibility of a polio-free world within reach. The WHO notes the final stretch is the most difficult and cautions nations against letting down their guard too soon. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the 29 recorded cases include a small number in Southeast Africa linked to a strain originating in Pakistan.
While it does not affect the WHO African region's wild polio-free certification, it shows us that as long as polio continues to circulate anywhere, it's a threat to children everywhere. Despite this news, we have a unique window of opportunity right now to end polio for good.
The WHO warns polio also can spread within communities through circulating vaccine-derived polioviruses. These variants, it notes, can emerge in places where not enough people have been immunized against this crippling disease. It reports these variants continue to spread across parts of Africa, Asia, and Europe, and new outbreaks have been detected in Britain, Israel, and the United States in recent months. UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell says the new polio eradication strategy is designed to take the world to the finish line. She says the strategy includes tactics to protect children from variant outbreaks and stop their spread to other countries.
We're also working with governments to speed up our response to these outbreaks, acting immediately to ensure that they do not harm more children. And we continue working to integrate polio activities with other immunization and health programs, so we can reach high-risk children who've never received vaccines before. The new strategy will help us end all forms of polio. It will also help prepare countries to respond to future health threats.
If this goal is reached, polio will become only the second disease after smallpox to have been wiped off the face of the earth. UN health agencies say it will cost $4.8 billion to achieve this historic milestone. The economic returns, they say, will be significant. They estimate eradicating polio would result in savings of more than $33 billion. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to the Ugandan capital, Kampala, where health authorities have confirmed 9 cases of the Ebola virus. The Ministry of Health says it has increased vigilance and set up an isolation center as confirmed cases in the country jumped to 90 with 28 deaths. Ugandan Medical Association says health workers are facing challenges getting patients into isolation, as Alima Thumani reports from Kampala.
In a tweet, Monday, Health Minister General Thacheng confirmed that Kampala had recorded 14 positive Ebola cases in the last 48 hours. All have the Sudan strain. Ministry spokesperson Emmanuel Ainebiona tells VOA the public needs to know that Ebola is now within close range, with contact numbers in Kampala now above 1,800.
There is Ebola in Kampala, without a doubt. The beauty is that we have already an isolation facility at Murago. We are setting up in the praying field at Murago. We have an isolation facility in Entebbe. And most of the people testing are contacts who have been in our isolation and quarantine.
In Acheng Street, she asked Ugandans to report themselves if they or a person they know had contact with an Ebola patient. But healthcare workers around the country say they are facing obstacles. Dr. Sam Oledo, president of the Uganda Medical Association, says the public's habit of seeking local remedies and treatment from herbalists remains a challenge and places health workers at risk.
If you are a contact of someone who is under isolation, report yourself. Either you hiding and predisposing everyone. But now the community members are going to help us to report to authorities which herbalist, which African traditionist is seeing patients.
The government is currently in the process of recruiting nearly 1,500 additional staff to combat the Ebola outbreak. The Ebola Sudan strain currently has no proven effective vaccine. Uganda has received supplies of two trial vaccines, the Oxford vaccine from the United Kingdom and the Sabin vaccine from the United States. But authorities are waiting for clearance from medical investigators before rolling them out to the public. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
The U.S. Africa Business Center of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is holding its first Africa Digital Innovation Competition for Africa startups. VOA is working as a media partner with the Africa Business Center on the initiative. Out of 17,000 candidates from 50 African countries, 10 finalists have been selected. We'll bring you a look at each one. Today, we hear from Amiodoyo Abioro from Nigeria.
Startups and small and medium-sized enterprises are changing the way Africa does business through innovation and technology. From agriculture, telecommunication, health, and so many sectors, young entrepreneurs are infusing vibrancy and energy into the African economy. Big business is watching and ready to support. Through the 2022 Africa Digital Innovation Competition, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and its prestigious partners are providing cash awards and mentorship support to three of Africa's top innovators, chosen from 17,000 candidates from 50 countries in North, Central, East, West, and Southern Africa. The Voice of America interviewed the top 10 candidates from where the finalists will be picked. Here is one of them.
My name is Imadoye Abioro. I'm a medical doctor. I'm co-founder and CEO of Health Botics Limited, the creators of Lendanon. I'm 28 years old and I'm from Ogun State here in Nigeria. I applied to the 2022 Africa Digital Innovation Competition because of my belief in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, as they were one of the first organizations that helped us and gave us support back in the early days of our pilot. What it means to me to be one of the top 10 finalists is a testament to the incredible amount of work that my colleagues and I have put at Lendanon. Lendanon being one of the top 10 innovations at this competition means that conversation is changing. People are now paying attention to what happens at the last mile of healthcare delivery, and that makes us very happy. And Lendanon is a single turnkey solution for hospital procurements at the last mile. So typically what would happen would be that hospitals would interface with almost 5-6 different agents before getting their procurement needs every single month. Lendanon is a solution that centralizes that entire process, allowing hospitals to get all of their required inputs from a single access point. We source and procure and deliver to their doorstep. Stockouts are the single most common cause of mortality in primary health care. Stockout of drugs, oxygen, blood, and essentials like that. These are the problems that Lendanon specifically tackles. The hospitals we support see an average of 1,500,000 patients in a year, about 20 to 30 patients every day. And when you add that together, that's over 1 million patients every year that these hospitals see. What's the first thing I would do if we win the competition? That's very interesting. I'd probably call my co-founder, share the good news with them, and probably call my parents as well. But most importantly, I would be sure to inform our current customers that their plight and the solution we're providing to that has gotten international recognition and support from the people who really matter.
That was Amedeo Abioro from Nigeria. His company, Land and Arm, uses a mobile application and a 24-hour call center to serve as a logistics hub for medical facilities around Nigeria. The company is one of the 10 finalists in the Africa Digital Innovation Competition for African Startups, organized by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, U.S. Africa Business Center. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Lucia by a Lokoya traditional group from Eastern Equatorial State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.